Thank you for that prayer, all of you, as we all pray together. Talk about teaching children diligently. I think that's the title I've given, but really the message will be about driving out folly. And it's a little bit different view, I think. Maybe it's not. Maybe this is all old stuff and you've thought it out through before, but about how to look at the need to, the methods of, and the purpose for discipline of children, probably in the younger ages. So I'm a granddad now. My oldest granddaughter is 6, and I have 9 total. So they're all kind of in that age where, you know, discipline is kind of like an everyday, every hour, 24/7 kind of concern for the parents, right? And I have found great joy. 2 kinds of joy, actually. One is in watching my kids do the job they're doing and worry with it and think about it. And I think in many ways are succeeding. But the second joy is that I don't have to deal with it. I just watch them and say, oh, okay, I guess they're doing great, but I'll go back home where it's peaceful, quiet. But it is something we have actually talked about a lot, and it's a little intimidating. The kids will say, Dad, you know, here's what's happening, as if I'm going to tell them the right answer, you know. What do we do about this, you know? And they puzzle over it, and it's almost like, and some of them are actually kind of scientific in their tasking. It's almost like there's an experiment going on. We tried this and it didn't work. We tried it again the next day and it did work. And then we tried something different and it seemed to work better. And then it stopped working. Y'all know what I'm talking about if you're living with that. And I think it's a hard task. We live in a fallen world. Have I mentioned that? Yeah. So, but you know, that means things are complicated. And evil is somehow woven into the fabric. Of temptation is woven into the fabric of the way we are personally inside, as well as the way the world works around us. There are thorns in the world, if you didn't know that. That means things are hard. And we have to accomplish things metaphorically by the sweat of our face, which means it will not be easy. Which also means you better work hard at it if you want to try to do better in overcoming those consequences of the fall. I think that view of rearing children is essential. And I think it's a unique view, maybe, that only a child of God would have. That doesn't make it simple, right? But it does give us a framework that's clearer for solving some of these scientific problems, these experiments that we try to figure out what does this say about this child at this age with this circumstance and so on as we try to figure out how to be better parents. So I want to talk about that. Let's have a thought experiment. We won't take a lot of time because I only have 45 minutes. But imagine this. This is silly, I know, but go with me. Suppose Adam and Eve had resisted this serpent, you know? Eve said, bug off, you know? And so he did, and they didn't get in trouble, right? You think Satan might have gone away for a season and returned? And I think I remember some verses about that. That tree would stay there. And I think that tree really represented something unique about man and woman, humans as opposed to animals. The ability to choose, to love God voluntarily. We talked about all that the other night. I think, but you can't prove me wrong because it's all imaginary anyway. That tree would have stayed there. What do you think Adam and Eve might have done as they had more children? They were obeying God to be fruitful and multiply. What would they have done about that tree? As we said, was in the midst of the garden.
Probably put a barrier around it.
Would you have built a fence around that tree? I think I would have too. But you know, teenagers get old and they can kind of climb over fences. Not that they would ever be tempted to do something they were not supposed to do just to see if they could do it. That would never happen. What else might you do? I like the fence. For the toddlers, for sure, I just put a fence up. Oh, well, I don't think that's an option. I've never had that answer before. I don't know. I might try. I mean, why not? You know, yeah, but, yeah.
Do what God said and teach them not to.
Okay, there'd be teaching involved, wouldn't there? Warning teaching. And it oddly would say, well, Mom and Dad, have you ever tried it? Well, then how do you know? Yeah, not that kids would ever reason, try to argue back with stuff like that, you know. Right? It doesn't look that bad to me. In fact, the fruit looks pretty good. That didn't, I mean, we know that it did, right? And even as they were younger, you might be preparing them for that time when you really were not going to be there every minute to, you know, make sure they didn't dig under the fence or, you know, climb over it or something. And you'd start to teach them about the real dangers of that. Even maybe before they fully understood what a serpent was
and what he was about and what, you know, what his motives were. And they're thinking, I don't know why they keep telling me this stuff. And, you know what? And I imagine maybe even making up little songs that they would sing. You know, if the serpent's near the tree, we will run away from him. Or something like that, you know. And the little guys, they sing it. They like to sing, right? They don't have any clue what that's about. But later, maybe, as those words mean something in their life, they've begun to see that. It developed habits and protective kinds of things and rules. You know what? Let's just not go near that part of the garden. How about that? Would you do something like that? Or maybe certain times of the day or when mom and dad are not around, there's a rule that I'm set up. They go, why? What's wrong with that? Can't you walk around? Where does the Bible say it's a sin to walk near them? Or you know, not that anybody would ever say anything like that. But you see those rules which kind of begin. Do you see where I'm going with this? A view of the world in which there is sin and danger of falling, it kind of makes parenting different. There's an urgency about it. And I think there's this, you know, this potential of evil that I think if you don't really believe in God, you don't believe in moral choice, free will of man, you don't have that same kind of view of things in rearing children. So there you go. Thank you for that thought experiment. It doesn't matter because it didn't happen, but we'll deal with the world as it is. So if you did believe there was no supernatural and that humans have just evolved from animals, there's no eternal spirit, what you do here doesn't matter in any other time after you die, for example. Religion is really just a human product. And there's lots of religions, and man has thought them all up, and some of them are pretty harmful because they suppress people and end up creating wars and all the typical modern view of things. I think that's the way mostly the world thinks about things. It's certainly not the result of an external revelation by an infinite personal God. And what is the purpose then of life without any of this kind of afterlife or supernatural or spiritual accountability or right or wrong restrictions and all that? What's life really about? I mean, only really one thing is, what can you get out of life while you're here? Let's do things that make you fulfilled, right? That make you feel balanced, that give you some happiness, give you a little bit of pleasure while you're young enough to enjoy it, and so on. Is that the view of the world? I think it is, really. There's maybe some aspirations which seem to me illogical, that there really maybe is kind of a right and wrong, and we shouldn't be cruel to people, and we shouldn't destroy the planet and other things. I'm never quite sure where those values come from if you don't really believe in a supernatural God, but there they are. Here are some quotes from the source of all wisdom, of course, the internet. And I really just did a simple search, a silly search, just said parenting. And these are the things that came up without me trying to trick them into, you know, saying what I wanted them to say. These are some of the first ones that came up. So the question was, what are the goals of parenting? And here are some answers. Prepare them to do well where? In this world. I mean, you can kind of see already that develop as a fully engaged person who is able to navigate through their own experience. What's the basis now? While feeling comfortable, main thing, in their own skin. Is there something that feels a little self-centered about that particular definition? Teach a child to become self-sufficient, fully functioning, contributing adult member of society. Self-sufficient. What's the idea there? I can figure this out. I get to the point where it all makes sense to me, and I know how to live in this world because I have figured it out. Guide children toward developing a well-functioned personality led by what? Unhindered, true. And I didn't capitalize that myself. That was there, right? And what is capitalized as the guide, the ultimate guide? The true self. I favor well-being. Of course, that's in this world as the most important goal of parenting. I'm not going to really critique those much more, but do you see the hint of kind of a worldly view? That there's not a right and wrong. There's no real disaster in sin. There's nothing really wrong with the world. In fact, we're all like puppies. You don't have to teach puppies to eat and play and go to the bathroom and that kind of thing. They just do that because they're made for this world just like human animals are, and they'll figure it out on their own. Through their instincts and other things. And this idea of right, wrong, and guilt, that's just harmful. That's a way of twisting people's minds and manipulating them. You ever heard this kind of language before? And I think it pervades a lot of the guidance related to disciplining children. So the principles are happiness and fulfillment. After all, if there is no resurrection, what do we do? Eat and drink, for tomorrow We die. That's the end. Each person's got to figure out for themselves what's best. You ever heard language like that? Just the child's got to leave them to themselves to figure out what they, their own fate, you know, all that kind of thing. That's because they're just natural animals. They live in a world. They'll figure it out. They strive for balance. Don't be extreme, right? Otherwise, you'll get kind of fanatical and you'll get radical and you'll get psychological problems and all of that. When I begin to look at the Bible, I see a different picture. And the pattern of God, which we looked at Saturday, as our Father, suggests that the motivation of discipline is love, even though it's unpleasant for a while. And if you don't have that discipline, that leads to, by the way, righteousness. You see that spiritual value is embedded in the whole process of disciplining. It's not just so that the house will be peaceful, or that you as a child will succeed in the world because you've learned how to work hard and you've learned discipline from that. No, there's a sense of righteousness. That's kind of a supernatural concept that really is underlies the source of discipline. I'm rushing through some of these because we've covered a lot of these ideas in some of the other sessions, but that's the idea. You know this passage from Hebrews 12, and it suggests some other things about discipline which you might look at later. And you know, Proverbs has a lot to do with that. It's advice to, I think, a young man about how to be a father. Now, I'm imagining that it would be useful as he is young and just married and having his toddlers, you know, that he has to worry with. But also, when he's old, when they're old, he's looking forward to that. And you probably thought, and maybe I'm making a habit of not covering the verses you expected me to cover. I don't know. Maybe that's a fault of mine, but you probably thought we would talk about train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. So there, I've covered it. But I'm not so sure it tells me how to train, or what's the secret, or what's it about, or what do I do. It just says you ought to do it, and maybe if you do, then there's going to be a consequence that lasts for the rest of his life. I think that's important, and I think we do discipline with a far-sighted view. It's creating a pattern, a habit. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects. And that's actually quoted in that Hebrews passage that we looked at just a second ago. He who spares his rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him promptly. I am going to come back to that one. In fact, no, I'll talk about it now. That phrase, disciplines him promptly, is a little bit strange in the Hebrew. It's used in some unexpected places that if you look at them, you start to think, For example, in Proverbs 7, you remember the story of that foolish guy that's wandering around near the house of the unfaithful wife? And remember that? And she sees him, I'm going to get that guy. And she comes out and uses all of her tricks. The way she dresses, she's handling him, touching him on all over. But one of the things she uses to get to his ego, she says, you know, I came out and I was looking just for you. I've been looking all over just for you. You remember that? That's in that Proverbs 7 thing. Man, would that, well, I'm not talking about that topic. That word looking just for you, that's this word, disciplines promptly. Seeking out, searching for discipline. It's really kind of the idea there. It's used in some other, I think in Job, for example, it just talking about how the goats are searching out for food. That's the same diligently kind of searching thing. What does that have to do with this verse? But it's not used very often, that particular word. I think that idea of discipline being a kind of a challenge to find the right answers, to work at all the time, right? Trying to find the light in some ways. Maybe it's the light at the end of the tunnel in some cases. But still, this idea of searching out, it actually, in an archaic form of the word, it did mean the early dawning of light in the morning, as if you're discovering something. Something's being illuminated slightly. We talk about this a lot with my kids, and I've kind of just adopted the model that discipline is a scientific experiment. And the more curious you are, and the more innovative you are, and the more observant you are, and the more you can detect patterns and try to reason about how things go together, I think that's important. That's about all I'll say about it, but don't get discouraged. But I'm not going to have a handbook that I can hand you and say, hey, step one at 7 a.m., do this, and then if you just follow this mindlessly, this recipe, the kids turn out perfect. I'm sorry, it isn't that way. And the parents have to work at it together, talk about it, sayings the mom observes and probably can observe the kid, the dad can't see. But anyway, other things. as well as what the dad does and says, working together to be consistent, to try a different experiment, try a different approach, thinking about what principles we'll talk about in just a minute. I don't think it's easy. And I'll tell you what else, just as a side application of that. If you're not with the kids a lot, I don't think you can do it. I just think that's the next logical conclusion. If you're not observing them when they're tired at night, full of energy in the morning, sleepy after lunch, grumpy because something happened in their life and you don't know quite what it was, but it's bothering them and they're acting out as a result. You don't know those things. How can you run this scientific experiment and search out diligently for discipline, which is, I think, the implication of this verse? You agree with me? Maybe you can figure it out from a few minutes of quality time every day. That was a facetious way of saying that. But I think it's hard. And handing it off to someone else, I don't get that. I don't see how you can do that. But that's all I will say about that particular. But very interesting Hebrew word about disciplining promptly. And then, of course, it's an eternal thing. It has a spiritual benefit, which only, I think, a believer in God would understand. Here's the verse I really want to talk about. And you can tell because I've got it in four different versions in three different colors. So it's my colorful chart. Puzzle with me about the meaning of this passage. Actually, there's probably five different colors up there. I don't know. Each one slightly different. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. And you see, each one is slightly different. I know I got a laser gun here. So bound up, tangled up. That's the Holman Christian Standard. I like that one. I think that's important. Bound up, but tangled up has a mental image that I think is helpful. And what is it? Well, folly, or sometimes foolishness, right? But discipline, that's what we'll be talking about, or correction, different word, will drive it or remove it far from him. And it's in the heart of a child, in a child. You don't really think, when you look at the Proverbs and think about what foolishness is, you don't start thinking of children right away. But this says that it's tangled up in their heart. It's tangled up, meaning that it's going to require some heart surgery to untangle it, but that's what the goal of discipline is. So that, I know this may not be making much sense. Maybe I can make it plainer as we go, but it suggests effort, first of all, a difficulty, but it's folly and it's in a child. How can that be? How can that be? That's what I really want to talk about, so I'm here. And you can compare that. You all understand the opposite of folly is wisdom, and Proverbs is about don't be a fool, but be wise and all that. And maybe you have some sense in your mind about what wise means and what foolishness means. Well, I'll start by telling you that foolishness is not just the Charlie Chaplin guy who steps on the rake and it bops him in the head and he should have known better than doing that. I suppose in some ways our life might look like that if we're living foolishly, but there's something deeper than that. And I want to quickly survey the Proverbs and see if we can't understand what wisdom and foolishness actually is. Here's the other verse. The opposite then is, the rod and reproof, whatever punishment is, give wisdom. You see, that's a displacement for whatever that folly is that we're untangling, that we're pulling out with our open heart surgery. But a child, and what's the opposite of that discipline, is not really quite abuse. I guess that would be too. But what's the opposite in this verse of disciplining a child? The opposite in that verse. Don't do anything. Exactly. Left to himself. And it seemed to me that's as much abuse as something that might be kind of cruel. Because you're left to the forces of evil that are in, that I mentioned, the fallen world, right? That's where we are. Okay, all right, so let's talk about it. Now, your definition of wisdom might be that, well, and I've heard this quite a bit. Well, you learn a bunch of things, and over time, you put the patterns together, and that learning a bunch of things allows you to draw conclusions. And that's wisdom, when you can apply it to life. You've ever heard that definition of wisdom? Knowing, knowledge is one thing, that's the base. Wisdom, though, is how to apply it in life, or something like that. I'm going to suggest there's a little different view of wisdom in the Proverbs. And here's why I would think about this. Can you be wise and still be a young son? Well, now, how can you do that? You can't learn a lot yet. You haven't been around long enough to have all those facts that you've pieced together and come to all those conclusions about. A wise son heeds his father's instruction. A foolish son brings grief to his father. Look at this in Ecclesiastes. A poor, and by the way, the implication of that is he hadn't gone to college or whatever the equivalent was. He doesn't have an education. He may not even be able to read and write. And he's a young guy. But what? He's better if he's wise. Now, that suggests he can be wise, even though poor, uneducated, and young. He's wiser than an old but foolish king. Why is that? Interesting the reason is. What's wrong with that king that makes him not even as wise as this kind of poor young man? It says it right there.
He doesn't listen.
And there are people who are trying to talk. He's not interested in other people's. And I think that's the beginning of a hint of where we're going with this wisdom thing. And anyway, for Proverbs 1, for giving prudence, and you know in the Proverbs there's about 7 different words for wisdom, but prudence is, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. I believe it's possible to be wise and not very educated and not very old. Kids, you can be wise. But what does that look like? What does it look like? Well, let's look at some of the pictures of the fool and see if you see a pattern in these proverbs. See if you can detect the pattern. The wise in heart accepts commands, but a chattering, babbling is another translation, that fool comes to ruin. There's a picture in that, probably some onomatopoeia in the Hebrew, where when somebody, you try to talk to them and they do this, you ever done this? You know what? You ever try to, you can't hear anything. If you're making noise and doing this, so how do you, one way to keep from listening is what? Talk all the time. Chatter, babble, make noise so that I don't have to listen. What makes a person wise in that situation? Look for the pattern. A fool spurns a parent's discipline, but whoever heeds correction shows prudence. Another word for wisdom. You see the pattern here? How long will you who are simple love your simple ways? How long will mockers delight in mockery and hate knowledge? Fools find no pleasure in understanding, but they delight in airing their own opinions. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The way of the fool seems right to them, but the wise, what? Listen to advice. Are you seeing a pattern here? And you know, sometimes I picture the wise man, he uses his fingertips to do this. Right? What's he doing? He's about to emit wisdom because he's a wise man. You can ask him anything and he'll tell you the right answer right away. Is that the picture you see up here? What do you actually see the wise man doing?
Being silent.
He's not saying anything. He's listening. That's what he loves to do. Even if it's something that he doesn't really quite like because it's correction, but he's interested in it. He's listening. What do you see the fool doing? Yeah, you ask him his opinion. Does he have an opinion? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Why did that go dim? I guess that's a projector. Don't scare me here. Yeah, but you see the difference? So, kids, I'm telling you, you want to be wise? What do you have to do? Say wise things? Know a lot of stuff? This is kind of like, some ways it's simple, but not really. But what you have to do is kind of easy to understand, hard or easy to do is a different question, but it is be a listener. Be open to advice. Seek the advice. That's kind of the heart of what wisdom is. And when you get older, does that change? I keep thinking in the multitude of words, there wanteth not transgression as I'm standing up here. But you know, as a wise older person, are you still wise because you listen a lot and seek advice and go to places where you know there's wisdom, including God's word? You see what I'm getting at here. But there's more, I think, to foolishness and wisdom. But I believe that's the heart of it right there. Okay, I don't know what's going on here. Your battery is running low. Is this guy on right here? Because my battery is already low. Good idea. That did it. Thank you. It seemed like it got brighter. Maybe that's a wishful thinking on my part. All right, I'm sorry for that. Can I have 2 minutes back at the end? Okay. Those who trust in themselves are fools. Those who walk in wisdom are kept safe. There's more, and I think we should look at these others because it will help us. Fools find no pleasure in understanding, but what do they delight in? Airing their opinions. Who gathers his crops in summer is prudent, but he who sleeps in the harvest. There's a sense of short-sightedness in that. Don't you see that? You know, this is the time you really got to do the work, and if you don't do it now, it's going to be much harder later to get it done, or maybe even impossible. So it's a short-sightedness, right? And there's a kind of a laziness or excuse-making. You see, the sluggard's afraid of a lion in the streets. I don't know how likely that really is, but for him it was a reason enough not to go do something. And there's a lot of motion, maybe, I think, video games for this somehow or another, but there's motion. He's turning on his hinges, but it's not going anywhere, right? It doesn't produce anything. No real work is done. And then he's too lazy to finish the job. He got the food made in the plate, got his hand all the way down there, but I'm just too tired to finish that job. Can't quite get it to his mouth. And then wiser in his own eyes than seven people who answer discreetly. You're seeing some of the same themes. And fool detests turning from evil. That is, if I'm being corrected, it's something I really like to do, but it's wrong. I really don't like to change what I'm doing because I think it's going to make me happy or I'm going to enjoy it. And a fool says in his heart, there's no God. Of course, that's at the very beginning. Now, thinking of that picture of the fool, I want to put two images together and see if you can make them kind of correlate a little bit. Is it possible that babies... I'm trying to think of the word, demonstrate or have some of the characteristics of what we just were seeing up here? Babies, I'm talking about babies. How good of listeners are babies? How good of noisemakers are babies? You know what I mean? They actually, and how big is their world? Is it as big as like, Mom, I know it's 3 a.m. I know you'd really love to get to sleep. And you know what? I was thinking about nursing, but, you know, I can wait another half hour. How big is a baby's world, really? That's as much as it is. I mean, am I warm and dry and full or something? And that's the extent of it. It's not any bigger. Who are you? You're the one that brings me what I want when I need it, right? But if you don't, I'm going to let you know about it. Right? I mean, but you just don't see that kind of unselfish and awareness of the world and, you know, and toddlers, you know, they're in a room where there's toys everywhere. And one toy is, you know, the toddler grabs that one toy and guess which one the other one wants right then. Never mind all those colorful, you know, noisy things all over the floor. No, I wanted that one. Do you expect the toddlers to say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were playing with that. I can wait another 5 minutes till you get distracted by another toy, and then I'll have my turn at that. Did that ever happen? I wish it did. But do you see some elements of foolishness in that? Short-sightedness and airing my own opinion and this sense of the world being as big as me, and that's all? And I actually know what I want, and I want it now. And there's no point in telling me that in 5 minutes you can have your turn with the toy. How well does that work? I wish it did. You hear the parents, you know, lecturing the kids, and I'm thinking, I don't think they understand all that. And if they do, I don't think they think it's a good idea. And their sense of time is not my sense of time either. You know that? I mean, you say, we're going to be going in 15 minutes. You know, how long is 15 minutes? I don't know.
Never.
It's just like never. It's like, that's the word, yeah. And teenagers, you know, you say, well, you know, here's the rule. Really, we got to do these chores. We need to do them now. I know that you'd love to go shoot some baskets and stuff, but we need to do it now. Well, okay. I mean, Mom and Dad, I just realized you're 30 years older than I am, and you're like three times as old as I am. You must know best. All that experience must make a huge difference, and I am sorry I wasn't thinking that way, and I should have come to you and asked for the advice of what we should do right this minute. That the way y'all do it? Y'all see the point I'm making. I can see in a child, even at any age, some things that look like a fool in the Proverbs definition of a fool being one who talks and doesn't listen, who seeks their own way, who's short-sighted in what they do, who doesn't have an awareness of spiritual things in the world, who doesn't like to be corrected and not get their way. Can't you see that? Now, I'm not presenting some Calvinist view that all these children are cursed. You know, that they're they're all lost in original sin and they're incapable of righteousness. That's not my point at all. But I am saying that each of us as a child has a beginning, innocent for sure, necessary for survival in this fallen world. We have a built-in selfishness, don't we? And as a baby, it's like the worst of all. There, you know, there's self-centeredness. And as you grow up and you learn the gift of language, you kind of are a talker, not a listener. Maybe there's some value in that. That's just, but you see now that folly is bound up, entangled, in what a child actually is. And maybe for good reasons and by God's design, but what do you got to do? If you're an adult and you're acting that way, and crying and self-centered and short-sighted, and will not listen to anybody and think you know everything, that's evil, you see? And you're moving toward a problem there that has moral implications, spiritual implications. Child's innocent, but there comes a point, and for different skills, different ages, in which you have to grow out of that. You need some surgery to untangle that folly from your heart. Does that make sense? And here are some of those things. I think I've covered them all. I think in a child that looks like this, rebellion, disobedience, disrespect, stubbornness, self-centeredness, selfishness, laziness, carelessness. Carelessness when care is, you're capable of being careful and understand that's required. Carelessness in that situation. And then, of course, obvious evil, which includes lying or being mean, hitting someone, using profanity and other things that would fall in the category of immoral behavior. But look at these definitions. Hates laws, hates instructions, doesn't listen, trusts their own opinion, likes to hear themselves, short-sighted, avoids work, attracts to sin, and so on. You see that? Can you think? Now, I'm wanting you to think of kids having to try to disentangle that from their hearts. And that's what discipline is about. That's kind of the heart of what I'm trying to say. Now, where do we go with that kind of view of the world? Well, back to this verse here, I've got to figure out how to disentangle it. And that's part of the science behind that. And part of the science is to say, well, now, is this behavior actually foolishness or not? And that's kind of with my, I call them my sons and daughters. I have four, you know, daughters that I didn't even have to raise. That was great. And they're great. But, you know, we talk about, is that in the realm of folly or not? And what we mean by that is in the area of rebellion or not listening or not being disciplined or being short-sighted when you know better. That's what we're asking. And so that's one of the challenges is to figure that out. But now you see why this colorful verse seems so important to me if we fully understand what folly means in light of the wisdom literature. So now you all understand. Let's do some test cases, all right? This folly or not? A two-year-old refuses to come at the parent's request. I hear folly. Got any votes on the other side? Wisdom? Okay, is there any like condition in which maybe that wouldn't be folly? Yes?
He needs hearing aids.
Okay, can't hear. Didn't hear, that's one, but somebody else had. What's another situation? What if I've never made a rule that you have to come at my request? I've never said, you know, it's rebellion when you don't come when daddy says come. And by the way, I think that's a pretty important thing to put in the realm of folly, meaning make a rule, is what I mean by that. Because is there a time when you really do want the child to respond just like that when you say come without question or wait till the fifth time, wait till the decibels reach 121 or whatever the rule that you've kind of set by example is, right? Or count to 17 or I don't know, whatever it is. No, there's probably a reason to want to come when we say come, right? But you may not have done that. And if you haven't, then it's really not folly when the child says, oh, I don't know what that means, but I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. So there is a kind of a two-sided question here, and that is the child doing it, and is there a rule that they understand with a consequence that's been stated, and they don't do it? Well, now it's in, we call it moving it into the realm of folly. And you see, as a parent, you can move some things into that realm or not. Some people decide, boy, politeness at the table is the key thing, right? Eat all your food. Don't play with your English piece. Here's what I've come to think about in the meal is this way. Kids kind of got this wide guardrails, run around the house, play with this or that. But when dinner time comes, those guardrails start getting really tight. You have to sit in the same seat for a long time, right? And you can't yell and you can't do stuff that I would ordinarily, like a few minutes ago, was okay to throw, you know, do things. But now I can't do that. And so the meal, I think for a lot of kids, is all of a sudden a bunch of restrictions all of a sudden on them. And at meals become kind of conflict zones. This has been my experience anyway. There are phases, right? There's the first phase where they can't hardly keep their hands off the food to eat it because they're kind of hungry. You have to hold their hands so they will at least say the prayer, you know. Then they eat whatever they like, and then there's this phase where they're kind of just playing around. Then there's the third phase where the parents are on their case, like every minute, you know, force feeding them and all the things that happen at the latter phases of the meal. And I think part of that's because we put more and more restrictions, and I'm not saying good or bad, I'm just saying this is part of the scientific thought you probably should put into it about that, and some people don't. Okay, you get the idea. I don't think we need to go through all these examples. A five-year-old child does not put on his seatbelt. Most of them now, you can kind of get in, they can do the buckling. Maybe they can't pull the tight strap, but they can do it. Is that folly or not? You know the right answer now is it depends on whether you made it folly or not. Have you set a rule and a consequence and so on? And a lot of these will be that. A four-year-old trips and hurts baby sister. No, that's not that is not an expression. However, baby sister's hurting just as bad as if it hauled off and whacked her, right? A four-year-old spills milk for the third time at dinner, and I'm just about fed up with that. I have told you to be careful, Mr. Four-Year-Old. You see, but do we sometimes discipline because of inconvenience and not for folly? Not because they've really acted in a rebellious way. A six-year-old breaks her own toy but denies doing it. Problem. If we've talked about honesty. A six-year-old, yes, I think so. Folly. A three-year-old blurts out an embarrassing family secret to a stranger. I beat him to death for that, you know. But right. An eight-year-old tries to help with yard work but damages my precious tool. No. Trying to help. An eight-year-old does not follow my instructions and damages my precious tool. A five-year-old says a bad word he learned at school. You see what's happening here is we have to decide, have we moved that into the realm of rebellion? And I think we kind of know the difference usually. You know, there's something about that third stage of dinner where the food is just a toy. If anything, it's usually less desirable. In fact, the best thing to do is this, you know, take it off the tray and drop it down and sit on it. You know, that, especially English peas. Y'all love English peas, I'm sure. Right? But it's always there, and they're great toys. In fact, kids love to experiment with English peas. You probably know this, right? And I have watched them test and retest and verify the law of gravity over and over. You know that. Right? Is that folly? Now that's folly. Is it folly? I want them to grow up to be another Isaac Newton, I guess, so they'll know about gravity. What is this?
Just a tester.
Yeah. There's a rule that they know about, and you maybe have just gotten a little swat on the hand as the child, but I'm interested in another law to see if it's consistent time after time, aren't I? Drop it. Look. Is it going to happen again? And that's a test, and it's a scientific experiment on the part of the child. I'm doing folly, and I'm going to learn from what happens as a result of my experiment, right? And it's a self-willed thing. It's rebellion against the rule, and it's so teeny and tiny, and you'd like to just ignore it, but isn't that the beginning, then, of untangling folly from the heart of a child? And how do you know? How do you know? And that's the science. You've got to define it. And so here's some others. The bad word. Okay, I think I'll keep losing that. 7-year-old is found secretly watching TVs before chores are done. You kind of get the idea. We're getting older, but yes, there are rules and there are violations of those rules. 4-year-old weeps uncontrollably over mom's departure. Okay, let's talk about that for a minute. And this is the thing that we talk about with my kids a lot. And that is, have we moved that behavior into the realm of folly, or are we trying to or not? And I think things like... You know, there's a shy kid, and they're strangers, and I would love for the child to look the adult in the eye And we say, what's your name, little boy? And they say, my name is Caleb. And they look in the eye, not rebellious, but I'm saying, yeah, they're confident. They know how to do that. And you can learn to do that. These guys are, watch this, how they shake hands. You know how to shake hands? Yeah, do it. You see, he looked me in the eye. He squeezed my hand really hard. How'd you learn to do that? You just noticed, right? Actually, when he came out for newborn, he said, hi, doctor. Is that right? Somebody taught him that. And you know, if it was the judgment of the parent to move that into the realm of folly, if you don't do that, and instead you go and you go burrow your head in mom's skirt and hold on. And I think sometimes we can reward that behavior by saying, well, he's just shy. You know, and he somehow gets more attention really for that kind of, you know, what we think of as undesirable behavior. Now, if you haven't made that a folly thing, then it don't punish for that. But if you've said in advance, look, here's the way we're going to greet adults. And let's practice before we go in. And if we don't, this is what will happen. But it's not hard. You can do it. And then praise when it's done right. You know, now you've moved it into the realm of folly and wisdom. Because are you going to listen and be obedient to that? Does that make sense? And I think the fewer things, this may be odd to think about, fewer things you move into the realm of folly, maybe the better off you are. Too many rules and you're going to get all mixed up. And so will the child. But things that are firmly in there, and you put anything you want to in there in a way, but you ought to think about long-term in life, is this going to help them or not? To have this kind of discipline and this kind of skill that I have moved. Y'all know what I mean now when I'm saying moved into the realm of folly? That is, if it's disobeyed, then it's a rebellion. If it isn't, then, okay, we'll decide whether to make a rule or not. But that's not a punishable thing. Okay, I think that's the idea. So here are some things you might think about moving into the realm of folly. Eating everything. Is that a big deal? I don't know. But decide and make the rule consistent. You see, and I'm not going to go through all of these, but how about if you want to eat nothing? Is that okay? One of my kids, they just put the food out there and they eat it. That's great. They don't throw it on the floor, but if they don't eat it, that's okay. Others, like we get to the phase 3 force feeding and sometimes sit at the table for hours until they eat that last bite of broccoli or whatever it is, right? I don't know which is right. I don't offer any advice one way or the other. But it is interesting to watch those two experiments in progress. Now, the one that doesn't eat, they don't get snacks or anything like that during the meantime. So I don't know. I don't have an opinion, really. Except I do have an opinion that you decide it is or it isn't. One day you don't punish for not eating the broccoli, and the next day you do. Or something. You see what I'm getting at? These are your choices, but they should be made strategically. Is this going to help the child? It may be child specific too, based on their temperament and where you think their strengths and weaknesses are, to decide what they need to work on and move into the realm of folly. Moodiness, I think. Are you in a bad mood? Well, you know what? We can control that. Let's go back upstairs and start the day over again. Come back down and let's have smiles and just see if that works. Forgetfulness, etc. Poor hygiene? I don't know. Maybe you care about that. Maybe you don't. I don't know. But decide. And then setting expectations really is needed to begin the discipline process. Now, this is a child whose name is Landon Marty. Is this folly or not? And the great thing about this wonderful child, who is my grandson, of course, is it never falls off the tray. You know what I mean? And at one point, he tastes it to see if the taste has changed. If he doesn't end up eating it, he just, you know. Anyway, I have to show that. That's not so relevant. Oh, no. Boy, I was going to get into troubled adolescent teens, and I guess there's just no time for that. Anyway. So punishment should be for folly. Does that make sense? You see what I'm saying there? Not for accident, not as a show to others to say what a great parent I am, not showing personal disappointment, you know, you didn't hit the home run, and I don't like it, I'm going to let you have it because I'm personally embarrassed. Or it's not because of our own impatience or embarrassment or inconvenience. It's not a warning, hey, things are getting loud. We just need a spanking to get everybody in the better, you know, controlled state of mind. Or an accumulation of small things. You know what I mean? This is the third, the fourth, the fifth kind of explanation of folly. That's the last straw. No, each one is its own thing. It's associated, not, it should not be associated with person. Sorry, it should be associated with personal guilt, not a group dynamic, or it should be certain if it's promised. If you say this is the consequence, it has to be, or you lose credibility. And the child is learning from that scientific experiment, and it will be a precedent for the future. I think the younger they are, the closer to the infraction it has to be. Y'all know why. They don't have a sense of time. And they have to associate what happened in terms of the rebellion or the folly in light of that consequence. And it needs to be painful, not for the moment pleasant, and probably more painful than what I got to do that got me this punishment. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can do something that's so fun. Yeah, I'll take a whipping for that. But and it's something like that. I don't even know how to stop here, except I just want you to, and a lot of this is in the book, so you can keep reading about that. And that's what it is. But you know, there's an antimatter world to discipline. And maybe I should end with this, because I think it's very important. And it's almost the mirror image of the world of discipline. And it's not for folly. Guess what it's for? Praise and for what? It's a reward, but for what? If it's not for folly, what's it for? It's for wisdom. And now we know what wisdom is. It's a person who listens. It's a person who's interested in somebody else's opinion. It's a person who shows self-discipline, who shows kindness toward others, who shows long, far-sightedness in the way they think and plan, and care in the way they operate, and diligence in the way they execute things they've been asked to do. If we're not praising that as much or more as we're executing this punishment for folly, it seems like we're making a huge mistake. Right? And the only real difference, they're exact mirror images. Read that list over here and you'll see it's the exact mirror image of what I mentioned as folly before. Praise for compliance, respectfulness, politeness, kindness, unselfishness, industry and initiative, truthfulness, for personal goodness. Right? And here's the difference. And you can kind of see it right here. Except my mouse is in the wrong place. Look at this difference here. Praise should be extended and celebrated. Whereas punishment, what? It's done. And you know what? I expect way better, and I know this is not you, and I'm hoping this, and this is my expression of love. And there's a checklist in there, by the way, of what you might go through in the case of an infraction. It does not include shouting or anger or any kind of violence, either verbal or physical. But it's a process you go through. So it's an expression of love, just like this is. But this one is over and quickly forgotten and put behind, and it helps with the scientific experiment the child is doing, but it doesn't linger as a sense of guilt or separation from the parents in terms of their approval. Okay? That wasn't going to be my ending, but it is now. Thank you very much for attention.